Today's date is
January 28th, and it's Sunday morning. We're learning Masechet Brachot, the first chapter, the eighth Mishnah. Right, first chapter, the fourth Mishnah. Right, we're going too quick here. So the first thing, let's just go through the questions. What is the direct object that the word Lefaneya refers to? And that's simple.
Shema.
But it's really Kriyat Shema. That's why it's in the feminine. It says Lefaneha and not Lefanav, before her as opposed to before him, because Kriyat Shema is the full expression and the word Kriya is feminine, the reading of the Shema, Kriyat Shema. And of course, I heard everyone doing their mathematics and taking their calculators out. There's seven brachot here altogether. Right, in Shema of the morning, there's two before her and one after her. Stop me if I'm saying anything that's not clear. And the Shema of the evening, there's two before her and two after her. So in the morning there's three, and the evening there is four, and three and four is seven. Seven brachot of Shema. As far as the order of the mention of Shachar and Erev in the Mishnah, we notice that the first and the second Mishnayot went from the order of Uv Shochpecha, Uv Kumecha, from evening to morning, whereas our Mishnah goes from morning to evening. And we ask ourselves, why the change in order? A simple answer to that question is a literary structure that's very, very well known, both from Tanakh and from Mishnah, and in literature it's called the chiastic structure, and the way the Talmud calls it is Patach B'meh Shisiem. It began with that which it recently concluded with. A-B B-A. And again, we can contrast it to a Greek way of thinking. A Greek way of thinking might be, if the order is A-B, first Erev, then Bokir, then that's the order you always use. A-B, and then A-B, and then A-B, and A-B. But the Mishnah is more of an associative way of thinking. If you do A-B-C-D-E, then you'll go E and count backwards. If it's A-B, Erev Bokir, then we'll do Bokir Erev. We will begin with the point that we recently ended with. Associative way of thinking. A-B-C, C-B-A. And you can use that rule, by the way, to see the structure of many, many chapters in Tanakh. A, B, C, D, D, C, B, A.
What was that English word you just taught me?
Chiastic. C-H-I-A-S-T-I-C. I never learned English in college, and I don't know anything about literary criticism, but from what I've heard from my teachers, that's what it's called. Okay, and it's very, very common. So we go to question four, open the Siddur and identify. Everyone, I assume, did that. Right? The first bracha, and let's talk about the themes of the brachot. Let's go to the evening, which is much easier. And I'm not opening the Siddur, you can if you want, but I want to go through this part more quickly. In the evening, it's clear that the first bracha is the bracha of Ma'ariv Aravim, who brings on the evening. And the second bracha is about the love God shows us in giving the Torah. It's in the evening. To use thematic language, the first bracha is about creation, and in the evening we pinpoint the aspect of creation that is relevant at that moment, the sun going down. To use another language, the first bracha is about nature. Nature, creation, and the aspect of nature that we are experiencing in that moment, an evening, is the going down of the sun. The second bracha is not about creation, it's about revelation. It's about the giving of the Torah. Giving of the Torah. It's creation and then revelation. The same thing in the morning. The first bracha, before Shema in the morning, is about the coming up of the sun. It's that aspect of nature, of creation, that we're experiencing in that moment. But in both cases, whether it's evening or morning, the theme is the sun, the natural world, the world of creation. Whereas in the morning, the second bracha, just like in the evening, it's about love of us shown by God through giving of Torah. It's about revelation. So the order is creation, revelation, both in the morning and the evening. First bracha, then the second bracha. The bracha after Shema, well, in the morning there's one, in the evening there's two. Let's talk about the one that comes in the morning. Its subject is, remember, its chatima is Bruchat Hashem Ga'al Yisrael, God who redeems Israel. Same thing in the evening. The theme is redemption. So it turns out, if you take the three brachot that we've just discussed, before Shema, the first bracha, before Shema, the second bracha, and the first bracha after, right? The order is creation, revelation, redemption, which is a periscope of Jewish history, of world history. Creation, revelation, redemption. The first stop is creation, the last stop is redemption, and the way station that brings us from A to C is revelation. Creation, revelation, redemption. And by the way, this three-point triangle, creation, revelation, redemption, as illustrated by the Brachot before Nesta Shema, was pointed out by Franz Rosenzweig in his book The Star of Redemption, written at the beginning of the 20th century, a great German Jewish philosopher, The Star of Redemption. Don't try and read it. It's impossible.
Equally impossible for me to understand why it's a triangle, not a straight line. I mean, that would suggest to me there's a path from redemption to creation.
He made a whole mathematical creation from it. One star, one triangle superimposed another triangle creates a Jewish star.
Yeah, it's called the Machloket.
Anyway, we said that the brachot... Oh, by the way, just have to say, so these three brachot, if they make up a progression from creation, revelation, redemption, why is Kriyat Shema stuck in the middle? Because it is the prime example of revelation. In other words, you say creation, revelation, sure, and then you do the revelation, Kriyat Shema, then you go on to the redemption. This perhaps can bring us to another question, which is on the sheets. What type of brachot are they? Are these brachot before and after Shema? So I put on the board the three types of brachot that we have in Torah. The first is what's called Birkot HaPerot, also called Birkot HaNe'anin, right? Blessings of fruit, also called blessings of enjoyment. And these are blessings that we say before and after foods, for example, or before smells, or before sights. Right? They're over enjoyment. I take away what I said about sights. Smells and foods, smells and tastes. So it's called Birkot HaPerot, the blessings of fruit, or the blessings of enjoyment. And again, it's what we say before and after food, and before smells. Those are the primary examples. The second category is Birkot HaMitzvot, which we say before mitzvot. Right. The third category is a catch-all that has three subcategories: Birkot HaShevach, Birkot HaHoda'ah, and Birkot Vakasha. Blessings of praise, blessings of thanks or acknowledgement, and blessings of request. And as we know, the Shmona Esrei has these three types. Just note the way I wrote things. Birkot HaPerot and Birkot HaNe'anin are the same thing. Two different words for the same thing. Whereas here, down at the bottom, it's three different types that are subcategories of category three.
So how does the fourth...
I'm going to get to that. Okay. I just had to change the order of my expectations. But you're right, I might forget to get to it. So, the question is, what type of bracha, or what type of brachot do we have here before and after Kriyat Shema? Which category do they fit into? Well, we could start checking. Is it category number one, Birkot HaPerot, Birkot HaNe'anin? Are we thanking God for something we're enjoying? Probably not. Probably not, because what could it be? Are we enjoying the getting of the Torah? We could say that. Except we have a rule that says, Mitzvot lav l'nehenot. Right. Mitzvot lav l'nehenot nitnu. Mitzvot weren't given for enjoyment. But we don't thank God for the enjoyment in them. We don't do them for the enjoyment. So it's impossible, therefore, that the brachot around Shema are for the enjoyment of Torah, for the enjoyment, or perhaps you say it's for the enjoyment of the sun. But that's what I corrected myself earlier. We thank God for the enjoyment of tastes and smells, but not for sights. It's just a rule. So they could be Birkot HaMitzvot. Perhaps it's the bracha before the mitzvah of saying Kriyat Shema. That's hard to believe. Why is it hard to believe? Because usually Birkot HaMitzvot have a special form of Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Asher Kiddishanu B'mitzvotav V'tzivanu. That's missing from the brachot before and after Shema. So it's hard to believe we're talking about Birkot HaMitzvot. So we said it's not number one, and it's not number two. It has to be number three. Birkot HaShevach, or Birkot HaHoda'ah, or Birkot HaVakasha. Are we requesting anything? No. So cross that out. So we're either talking about Shevach or Hoda'ah, praise or thanksgiving, and sometimes the border between these two is very difficult to ascertain. What's the difference between praise and thanksgiving? There's a difference, but it's not always clear. So in any case, these brachot before and after Shema are brachot of praise and thanksgiving. Just let me say one other thing, which brings us to the following. They're not intrinsically related to Shema. They're not over the enjoyment of Shema. They're not over the mitzvah of Shema. They're brachot of praise and thanksgiving, which are not intrinsically related to the Shema itself. And the truth is that you could say those brachot without Shema. Proof. The times in which you're allowed to say those brachot are different from the times you're allowed to say Shema. Shema you're allowed to say until how many hours of the day according to Rabbi Yossi? The third hour. The brachot you can say to the end of the fifth hour. So really, the brachot and the Shema are separate units. Yes, indeed, the rabbis instituted them as far as one frame, as a framework, but really there's no intrinsic connection between them.
These brachas, you could say that during the same period of time that you're allowed to say the Shemone Esrei.
Exactly. The times of the brachot, according to the halachas, it's brought in the Mishnah Berurah, are the same times for the Shemone Esrei, which is much, much longer than time you have for saying the Shema.
The brachot, were you seeing natural wonders or a great Torah scholar, or those are sights, but they would be Sheva?
Right. They're down here. Exactly. Okay, so let me just mention that there is an opinion in the Rishonim, there's an opinion, that the second bracha before Shema, when its theme is revelation, there's an opinion that it is a special, unique form of Birkot HaMitzvot. Even though there's no bracha Hashem Kinei Mecham, Asher Kiddishanu, but some Rishonim, it's not the accepted opinion, some Rishonim say that it's a bracha over the mitzvah of Shema. But that's not the accepted opinion. The accepted way of understanding it is Birkot HaShevach and Birkot HaHoda'ah.
Did we categorize in one-word style the fourth?
No, Amiram said the same thing. I left that for the end because it doesn't fit into any category we're discussing here. It doesn't fit into the creation, revelation, redemption. So the last bracha, the second bracha after Shema in the evening, which has no parallel in the morning, right? Has no parallel in the morning. It doesn't fit into the structure. It's a little bit of a later bracha. There are different theories of where it came from. The first word is hashkiveno, cause us to lie down. Right? It's a bracha for protection. And it doesn't fit into the pattern of creation, revelation, redemption, and then protection. It's a separate bracha. And part of the litmus test to the proof for that is that it doesn't have a parallel in the morning. It's a bracha that might actually have been transferred from Kriyat Shema Lemita to here. That's a whole different...
Kriyat Shema Lemita.
Kriyat Shema before going to sleep.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a basic overview of these brachot. And then we get to question 8, I guess. You're right. What was question 8?
Question 7 we haven't covered yet.
Well, that's what I said, that these brachot don't say Asher Kiddishanu b'mitzvotav. So they're probably not, it seems, they're probably not Birkot HaMitzvot. Question 8 was, what is the fundamental problem understanding the connection between the part of the Mishnah that begins Achat Arukah and the earlier part of the Mishnah. In other words, it gives you all these brachot, you say the seven brachot, and then it says Achat Arukah and Achat Ktzara. One is long and one is short. So what's the problem?
You don't know which ones it's talking about.
Why don't they just explicitly say which brachot we're talking about?
Talk about seven, then you say one is long, one is short, but there weren't two, there were seven. So life gets difficult. That's why we're here, because life is difficult. So let's go through the different possible interpretations. There are three different possible interpretations. We'll go through it looking at the Rishonim, at the commentators. And the first commentator is Rashi. So we look at Rashi, and this is commentary on the Mishnah as it appears in the Gemara. So here's a page of Gemara, and the Mishnah appears down here, and Rashi's commentary is over here on the upper right-hand side. And Rashi says, Dibur Matril, opening phrase, Ahat Arukah v'Ahat Ktzara. Who needs help to find it?
I need a copy of that.
Yeah, copy. Okay. Is this a good copy to give you? I guess so. Rashi is over here, where my little black line is to...
Oh.
The old black line trick. And the first word of Rashi is the last word of a line. And it's in bold-faced type, Ahat.
So the preceding three lines are not Rashi?
The preceding, they're Rashi, but that's Rashi at the beginning of the Mishnah, and I don't want to use that. I mean, we don't need to use that. We're just going to use what is Ahat Arukah v'Ahat Ktzara. And Rashi says as follows, Shtayim lachareya da'aravit kai. So the first word I read was ashtayim.
The first letter is an aleph?
Yes, that's the first letter is aleph. And that, it looks like one word, ashtayim, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not. In Aramaic, the preposition that means concerning is connected to the word that follows it. In other words, it is a prefix. Ashtaim means on Shtaim, or concerning Shtaim, or about Shtaim. Ashtaim le'achareya de'aravit kai. Concerning two that are after her, of aravit, it stands. Right? The first phrase was ashtaim, which means concerning two. Then it says le'achareya. That's the word from the Mishnah. After her, the on or concerning the two of after her, de aravit, de in Aramaic means she, that of aravit, of the evening, kai, it stands. Kai means stand, like kayam. So what it's telling you is that the words that we don't understand, what they stand on, what they refer to, they are referring to shtayim de la'achareya de aravit. Two that are after her of the evening. That's Rashi's opinion. That those words, one long and one short, refer to the two of the evening of after her. And why does Rashi say that? What's the grammatical or syntactical logic for Rashi's position? Very simple.
Just talk about this.
It's right. It's the last thing referred to before the words Ahat Arukah v'Ahat Ktzara. One long and one short. It refers to what came immediately before that. Fine. That's Rashi. But now we have to understand in what sense are the words long and short being used? Well, you might say long means long and short means short, which is a good first good first hypothesis. And we look in the brachot in the Siddur. We notice that indeed, if you're looking at the brachot of the evening, of after Shema, the first one is very long and the last one is short. Right? The one that's long begins with the words Emet Emunah, and it goes on and on. And the second one is very short. It's Hashkiveinu, protect us. And that's true. Long means long and short means short. But I do want to add one other little nuance to it. The bracha that is long has a number of different sub-themes. The bracha that's short, it doesn't have any room for sub-themes, it's just protection. Right, the one that's long, I really don't want to go into it right now, has a number of different sub-themes. It talks about, it gives examples of gula. Okay? Okay, that's Rashi. Another possibility is the Rambam. A completely different understanding of which is one and which is one. Achat arukah, achat ktsara. So we turn to the Rambam in his commentary on the Mishnah. Right, Rashi reread in his commentary on the Gemara, which has in it Mishnah. Here we're reading the Rambam's commentary on the Mishnah as a separate unit. And the Rambam, and again, this is, you didn't get one.
No. Thank you.
That means it's an older copy, which is an original.
Is it something we got before?
Yes, everyone got a packet of three pieces of paper for me. No, how you didn't get it, because it got the questions, then you...
Yes?
Yeah. No significance. He just didn't write a commentary on the Mishnah as a separate unit.
Extra copy. I have them. Sorry.
I knew it.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Rambam's commentary on the Mishnah, we're looking where my bracket is. Left-hand side near the bottom. And the word quoted from the text of the Mishnah is Ubracha Arukah. He Yotzer Umariv Aravim. The long bracha is Yotzer, which is the first word of the first bracha before Shema in the morning. One of the first words. And Ma'ariv Aravim. So Ma'ariv Aravim is the bracha before Shema, the first bracha before Shema in the evening. So let's put this on the board. So according to the Rambam, let's put Rashi. Rashi says the bracha arukah was emet v'emunah. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Is that okay? Mm-hmm. It was emet v'emunah. And the ktsara was hashkivenu. And I'm going to say long means long, and short means short. But then the Rambam says that, what is the long bracha? It refers to two of them, not just to one. And one is Yotzer, and the other is Ma'ariv Aravim. So I'll write here, Yotzer, and Ma'ariv Aravim. And then what is Sarah according to the Rambam? And Sarah Ahavat Olam. Now, Ahavat Olam, we have to know the following. Just listen to this for a minute. In our Siddur, our Ashkenazi Siddur, the first two words of the second bracha after Shema in the evening and the first two words of the second bracha after Shema in the morning are different. Ahavat Olam and Ahava Rabba. But in the Sfardi Nusach, in the Sfardi, it's the same words in the morning and the evening. So when the Rambam says, it's referring to the bracha ktsara, Ahavat Olam, it means both morning and evening.
Because Rambam's Sfardi.
Right. So I'm going to put Ahavat Olam.
Trick.
And I'm going to write it twice so we understand. Ahavat Olam and Ahavat Olam. Or the same thing twice, just to make sure we understand. So let's examine what we have on the board now. The Rambam says, what is the long bracha? The long bracha is Yotzer and Ma'ariv Aravim.
There's two?
Yeah, there's two. Not like Rashi, this is one long and one short. According to the Rambam, it's two. Achat arukah v'achat k'tzarah, but there are two long ones, and there are two short ones. What are the short ones? Ahavat olam. And ahavat olam.
There are two yotzeres.
Right. But what do you mean, two yotzer?
Well, there's a bracha, the first yotzer, or v'rei choshech.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is Yatsir Hama Oros.
So it's one bracha, but you're actually, I'll explain that in a second, you're actually hitting the nail on the head. And I'll explain. So again, according to the Rambam, the long bracha means the first bracha before Shema in the morning, and the first bracha before Shema in the evening. Okay? And short means the second bracha before Shema in the morning, the second bracha before Shema in the evening. Okay? So we have to ask ourselves now two questions. What does long and short mean? And secondly, what is the syntactical justification for the Rambam's understanding? We said the syntactical justification for Rashi's understanding was juxtaposition. One long and one short refers to that which was just mentioned. But what's the Rambam's syntactical... Well, actually, here it's not syntactical. What's the Rambam's justification? The Rambam's justification is going to be as follows. The Mishnah says one X and one Y. The Rambam says that refers to any place that there are pairs in the Mishnah that you can divide into one and one. Where are there pairs in the Mishnah, pairs of brachot? Remember, how many brachot are we talking about? Seven. So there are... three. So there are right, seven. There are pairs, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, and then there's one without a pair. Mm-hmm. Let's see if this works.
You're saying 1, 2 morning and evening, 1, 2 morning and evening, 1, 2 morning and evening, and then an extra. The
yeah.
pair is morning and evening. That's what you're calling the pair. The first one morning and evening, the second
yeah, but
one morning and evening.
Yeah, but I just got myself mixed up. I don't understand what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'll have to ask myself. So let me look up. What am I saying? Yeah. Where is there... Right. So I'm sorry. I said it a little bit wrong. According to the Rambam, we're talking about the only brachot before Shema. Because it's only in the brachot before Shema that there's always two together. I'll explain what I mean. But I said it incorrectly. In the morning, before Shema, there is the first bracha before Shema and the second bracha before Shema. And that's what it means, one, one. One is long, one is short. The same thing before Shema in the evening. There's one, one. First bracha and a second bracha. Whereas after Shema, there's not always a 1-1. In the morning, it's only one. In the evening, there's 1-1. But the only place that there's always a 1-1 is in the morning. And in the evening, before Shema. There's always 1-1. That's the Rambam's logic. It says, one is like this, one is like this. Where in the Mishnah do you have a situation that there's always a 1-1? It's always before Shema, where the morning and evening is a 1-1. That's the Rambam's justification for his opinion, that when it says 1-1, it means both. Yotzer and Ahavat Olam, and Mariv and Ahavat Olam. The one first before and the second before, the first before and the second before. The 1-1 refers to that those places which we always do a 1-1. Should I say it again? Amram, are you...
Not completely.
When the Rambam says one is long as one is short, where are there always pairs? So I could say one is X and one is mm-hmm. Y. Where are there always pairs? Only before Shema there's always pairs. Before Shema in the morning and in the evening there's a first and a second. And before Shema in the evening is a first and a second. So you can say concerning first and second, one is X, one is Y. Whereas after Shema there's not always a pair that can say 1-1. In the evening there is, but the morning there isn't.
I thought he defined
right.
Long as...
We didn't define yet what it means.
Okay. Because if you do that, it seems like that...
ruins it.
Right.
Yeah. So now let's ask, given that the Rambam says one long and one short refers to the first before Shema is long, the second before Shema is short, learning anything, in what sense is he using the words long and short?
In the morning we sort of can understand.
In the morning we could have understand, but it doesn't work in the evening, the long and short.
They both seem short.
So the answer is that for the Rambam, long and short doesn't mean long and short. It means long and short structurally, but not quantitatively. Rashi used long and short in the sense of quantitatively, more words or more themes and less words. For the Rambam, it's structurally long and short, but not quantitatively. What do I mean? A long structure for the Rambam. David, you got it?
Yeah, it means, I mean, I didn't test it, but it's a Baruch et to Hashem at the beginning and at the end of the bracha.
Right.
That's called a long.
Right.
That's
a long bracha is one that has all the components of a bracha. It begins with Baruch and ends with Baruch. That for the Rambam is a long bracha. A short bracha is one that's missing something without defining what it's missing. So if we look in the Siddur, and again I'm doing this quickly, but if we look in the Siddur, the brachot, the first bracha before Shema, whether morning or anything, begins with Baruch and ends with Baruch. So that answers your question. You were saying it's two brachot. Right. It's not two brachot. Right. When
it
says,
it's
a beginning and end. But you understand what I'm saying.
Right.
The first bracha before Shema, both evening and morning, begins with Baruch Ata Hashem and ends with Baruch Ata Hashem.
Uh-huh.
Whereas the second bracha before Shema, whether morning or evening,
just ends,
but doesn't begin with Baruch. Therefore, it's a short bracha, not in its quantity of words, but in its structure. Its structure is missing, is lacking something. Therefore, it's called a shortened bracha, according to the Rambam. Okay.
Yeah, actually, where you see it is in benching. Those brachas always begin and end, except that at the end, I guess it doesn't.
Actually, not so.
Oh.
The second bracha of Birkat HaMazon doesn't begin with Baruch.
Doesn't begin. Oh, because they say it just had an ending one, and so you don't need
a new
one.
Exactly, and that's exactly the concept we want to bring up here.
Oh, yes.
What we've discovered is that What we've discovered is that sometimes brachot begin and end with Baruch, and sometimes they don't. So let's discuss the sometimes they don't. In Kriyat Shema, a bracha that doesn't begin and with, that's missing something from the beginning and ending, it's called the bracha Ktsara, according to the Rambam, a short bracha, and we're talking about the brachot, the second bracha before Shema in the morning and evening. It begins with Ahavat Olam or Ahava Rabbah and ends with Baruch, but doesn't begin with it. What's the halakhic justification for beginning a bracha without Baruch? So David just said, it's called, with me, it's called a bracha ha-smucha le-chaverta. A bracha that's depending on its fellow. Or a bracha that's adjacent to its fellow. It's the same word. So this second bracha before Shema in the morning and evening doesn't begin with Baruch, because it doesn't need to begin with Baruch, because it's depending on, for its opening, the closing of the previous bracha. That the first bracha begins and ends with Baruch. The second doesn't begin with Baruch, because we say it's depending on the ending of the previous one to serve in a certain sense as its own beginning. That's the structure.
Well, that is then similar to Yishtabach, depending on Baruch Shemar, right?
No, it's different. That Psukei Dezimra are one unit, beginning with Baruch and ending with Baruch. Simple. It's one long bracha, in a certain sense. Yeah. So you don't use the concept of bracha smucha lachaverta, blessing depending on its fellow. It just is a one unit of a long bracha, beginning with Baruch and ending with Baruch. beginning with Baruch Shemar and ending with Yishtabak. Yeah. So, we now have the Rambam and Rashi. So let's finish the Mishnah. So if we finish the Mishnah, we read the words of the Mishnah that say as follows. Makom, everyone see the place? We'll read together.
I don't even know the right page.
Yeah, I see. You use English one. I think I can sort.
Yeah. Okay.
Here.
Yep.
Let me see if everyone has it. You can want to use this one or this one. Okay. So Bernie's just looking. Okay. Great. So in the second half of the Mishnah, Makom Shamru Larich. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone say yes?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Makom Shamru Larich, in a place that they said to Larich, to do long, Eino Rashai Lekatzer. You're not allowed to do short. According to Rashi, it means in a place that they said to put a lot of words, you're not allowed to put less words. According to the Rambam, it means according to a place they said begin and end with Baruch, you're not allowed to not begin then with Baruch. Okay? Lekatzer, meaning a place that they said lekatzer, a place that the rabbi said to shorten, eino rashai larich, not allowed to lengthen. For Rashi, it means you're not allowed to add more words, more themes. For the Rambam, means you're not allowed to begin end with Baruch in a place they didn't say to do so. Okay? Last few words, lachtom, eino rashai shelo lachtom, which means in a place they said lachtom, not allowed to not lachtom. What does it mean? For the Rambam and Rashi means the same thing. Lachtom means to end with Baruch. Remember signature, to sign off? In a place they said to sign off with Baruch, you're not allowed to not sign off with Baruch. And the last five words, Shelo lachtom, eino rashai lachtom, which means in a place they said, don't sign off with Baruch, you're not allowed to sign off with Baruch. So, I know I went very fast and I confused a little bit, you have to think about it, but I'm just going to try and now learn out from everything we did some type of larger meaning. So according to Rashi, we're told at the end of the Mishnah, you're not allowed to change the quantity of words, longen or shorten, and you're not allowed to add or subtract a hatima, to do what the rabbi said. For the Rambam, it's different. For the Rambam, there's no discussion of quantity of words. For the Rambam, the whole discussion was beginning and ending with Baruch. For the Rambam, when it said, you can't lengthen, or you can't shorten, it meant you can't begin with Baruch unless you're told. When it said, you can't sign off, it meant you can't sign off with Baruch unless you're told. Is there anything that I should say again? I don't know how frustrated, I don't know if you're very frustrated or just partially frustrated. So let's think about the meaning of this for a second. And to make it easier, let's think in terms of the Rambam. And the Rambams, it's easier to think about. This is a Mishnah that's introducing the idea of brachot before and after Shema. Until now, we've talked about Shema. Now, the brachot before and after Shema. And we've learned that those brachot are only tenuously connected to Shema. They're a separate rabbinic ordinance. They're not even brachot about Shema. They're probably, as we said, birkot ha-shevach, or birkot ha-hoda'ah. And these brachot, according to the Rambam's reading of the Mishnah, you have to keep them in the rabbinic framework. You can't add or subtract Baruch at the beginning or the end. That's what it's saying. So therefore, clearly the Mishnah has its esteemed rabbinic authority. You have to do what the rabbi said. You have to have the Baruch before and after when they said it, and not when they didn't say it. You can't add it, you can't subtract. You have to do what you're told. So that rabbinic authority, and that's clearly as well the theme of the previous Mishnah. Rabbinic authority. Rabbi Tarfon did wrong and he was severely criticized for that. You have to follow Beit Hillel and only Beit Hillel. We learned from the previous Mishnah of Rabbi Tarfon. However, let's think a little bit deeper. If according to the Rambam's reading, in establishing a binyan authority, the Mishnah emphasizes you can't add or subtract Baruch at the beginning or the end, then think of what the Rambam says the Mishnah doesn't say. It doesn't say anything about the inner words of the bracha, just the opening and the closing. And this is what's called miklal, from what is said, you have to focus on what is not said. And the point is as follows. If according to the Rambam's reading, we're being told to maintain the framework that the rabbis instituted and don't add or subtract Baruch before or after, from you hear from that, that is the limits of the framework the rabbis have established, whereas the words themselves within the bracha are free. You can say whatever you want. I exaggerated. I'm sorry. We have themes. You have to maintain those themes. And you have to maintain the opening and closing Baruch and Baruch according to what they instituted. But what you say inside the bracha is dependent on your... It's flexible within the themes we've talked about. Now, that's clearly true. You open up today a Sephardi Sidur, an Ashkenazi Sidur, and you compare the words. Compare what I say to what my wife says. It's very different. You open up the Sidur of my brother-in-law, who's a Yemenite. You don't know where you are. You can hardly distinguish the same themes. And that's in the 21st century. You go back to the 10th century and look at the different Sidurim that were found in the Geniza, for example. I won't explain that now. Pages from the Sidur of Rav Sadia Gaon, Rav Amram Gaon, Rav Hai Gaon, going back 9th and 10th centuries, the words are flexible. The words, according to the Rambam, were meant to be flexible. And so it's really fascinating, and with this we're closing, that in a place that the rabbis are emphasizing rabbinic authority, they're at the same time telling us that that authority is limited to the structural framework, but how you express the theme of the bracha within that framework is left to you or to your community. Remember, Sidurim weren't written at this time. We have structures that the Jews and the Shulich Tzibur, the Chazan, are told to stay within. Stay within these structures. But the words themselves within the structure are left free. And therefore we see the whole structure of Mishnayot Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet. That Mishnah Aleph, remember, talked about setting boundaries, but at the same time talked about the dangers of those boundaries and talked about the fact that those fences are meant to keep people in, but shouldn't prevent people from, are meant to keep people from straying out, but they shouldn't prevent people from getting in. And we saw the flexibility there, that if you missed Chatzot, you have until the morning. Like the second Mishnah talked about the flexibility of, you don't have just the time that most people wake up, even the time that the kings wake up, you have that flexibility. And we also had there that if you miss the time completely, you should still say it, at least do it for Shema. I'm sorry, do it for Talmud Torah. And the idea of you didn't miss the boat, there's always a little bit more flexibility. And the same thing in our Mishnah, that while we're emphasizing rabbinic authority and parameters and structure, we're also telling, we're being told that you have a certain degree of flexibility as far as the words themselves that express the theme.
So it seems that the Rambam's reading, then the same thing seems to be said twice in the Mishnah.
Good question. So what we have to say is that La'arich and Lekatzer is referring to the opening, and Lachtom and Lo Lachtom is referring to the closing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't it seem like Rambam's defining his terms already cover Lachtom?
Say it again, please.
His definition of terms already covers Lachtom. He says La'arichin has to be the first
one. So that's what David just asked.
Yeah.
So my answer was that the Rambam will say that La'arichin Lekatzer only refers to the opening, not to the closing.
It means, do you have a blessing at the beginning or do you not have a blessing at the beginning?
Right.
And then the second clause is, do you have a blessing at the end or do you not have a blessing at the end?
Right. That's the way the Rambam is going to read it. Yeah, Steve, or should I?
Yeah, sort of.
Long doesn't mean a blessing at the beginning and the end. Long means a blessing at the beginning or
right.
not. And the sign-off means sign-off or not. Am I
right.
understanding that?
100%. Yeah. In other words, in the way we justify that reading is saying, in a place the rabbi said to make a long blessing, you're not allowed to make it short. It means a place they said to open a blessing so that it can become a long blessing, to open with a baruch so that it can have the framework that would make it into a long blessing. If it ended with baruch, you can't take away that first baruch. Okay? That's the story. We did a lot.
Outstanding.
Okay, so...